Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, your host. We're glad that you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about business, and that's all kinds of businesses, whether it's big business, small business. We like to talk about customer service. We like to talk about success. We like to talk about leadership and all those things that go into operating and running a business or being an integral part of a business. And as always, we appreciate you listening. Our guest today is Art Cleave. Art is the owner of Nobody's Auto Repair. It's a great name, Art. Nobody's Auto Repair out in Lawrenceville. Art, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you.
Art, we spend a lot of time here on Driven to Business talking about customer service. It's one of my favorite topics, actually, because it's something that in our business we pride ourselves in. And from what I know about you, you pride yourself in it. You're in the automobile repair business. And as I think both of us would have to admit, that's not a business overall that has always enjoyed the best reputation in terms of customer service. Although, in my experience recently, that seems to be changing, and people are paying attention to that now. Could you give us your thoughts about that?
Well, I'll just tell you, that happens at the beginning. When you decide to go into business, you need to decide if you're there to make the most profit or if you're there to serve. And I have to tell you, when I went into business, it was strictly service. If we were successful, great. If we weren't, we'd find something else.
You know, though, fortunately for both of us, it's not good customer service versus profits. I think, in fact, good customer service and profits go hand in hand, at least long term. Now, I know there's always a short term for any of us in business, there's a short-term temptation to cut a corner here or there because it looks at the moment like there's a bit of a gain there. But I think both of us would admit that long-term, there's no gain at all there.
There's no gain at all.
You know, you and I are both small business enterprises. At my company, EMA, Inc., Electronic Maintenance Associates, I've talked to you about it a little bit before the show. We have three locations in the United States. We're here in Norcross, we're in Pennsylvania, and we're in New York. And our business is taking care of electronic motor drives, but I'm still a pretty small business, especially compared to our competitors who are large multinational corporations for the most part. You've also had part of your career, you spent in very large multinational corporations.
I have.
And now you're running a small business. I'm just curious about your what thoughts you may have of the differences between the two.
Well, I would say the biggest difference is the manpower, having flexibility in a large corporation to have more resources available to you. But bottom line is you have to do things in a systematic approach, big business or small business. If you're just running around, you're chasing your tail. It doesn't work.
Yep. I would also think, you know, one thing that I think I enjoy, I'm not only a small business art, I actually enjoy doing business with small businesses. And one of the reasons I think that is, and I'm sure that it's this way at your business, is that, you know, if somebody has an issue with your business, there's not this large bureaucracy they've got to deal with to get to the root of the problem. They're probably going to end up talking to the main man, which is you, in that business, and feel like they get the attention they deserve. That's something, as we both know, if you're dealing with a very large, if you're dealing with General Electric, I mean, you try to get somebody on the phone at General Electric that even can begin to address your problem, well, you're going to be on the phone a long time, probably. And this is not a knock on General Electric. I like General Electric. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying that is an advantage a small business actually has, I think.
You know, I think, Eddie, that only happens when your business has not been cultured to customer service. If the customer is satisfied with the manager or even the technician with his answer and his response to his problem, he doesn't need to talk to me.
Right.
So I think it's a culture thing. If you can get that culture, customer service driven in through the whole business, you're going to be fine.
I absolutely agree with that. And from what I know about your business, what I've heard people say about it, you do have a good culture of customer service there. But, you know, Art, that does start, you're being modest about this, but it does start at the top. If the guy running the place doesn't care about it, well, then it's pretty hard for the people down the line to care about it either. You know, they're only going to care about what you care about.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And then, when you talked about large business and small business, I've been in both seats in the large business where they talked the talk, but they didn't walk the walk.
Right.
And I also was in a large business where they talked the talk and walked the walk. And it's phenomenal, the difference.
You know, another subject here on our program that I like to talk about is ethics. And Art, I've always said that the whole capitalism system really rests on an ethical premise. And if you don't have an ethical premise underlying what you're doing, then it doesn't work. And I always use the example of, you know, if you're my neighbor and my lawnmower breaks and you've got a lawnmower and you decide to sell me your lawnmower, and I say, okay, I'll give you $200 for that lawnmower, and you say, okay, well, then we have, without getting lawyers involved and without getting anybody else involved, there's an underlying ethical assumption that, number one, I'm going to give you the $200 like I promised, and number two, when you give me the lawnmower, you're not going to take the wheels off or take the engine off of it or something like that and game me. And if you don't have that underlying ethical premise in business, well, then it doesn't work, because you can't always go get a lawyer involved in everything. And I know in our business, and I'm sure in yours, that there's sort of a good faith understanding between you and a customer about that. If you tell a customer that he has a bad alternator, he needs to trust and believe that he has a bad alternator and that you didn't make that up to get money out of him. And the second that they don't think that is the moment you lose their trust. And in my business and in your business, that's really all we have. They're depending on us to do a job. They have to trust what we tell them. So I think ethics is a huge deal in business. And I know that you are a Rotarian and you're an honest businessman as well. Talk to us, in your opinion, about the importance of being ethical in your business dealings with customers.
Well, without that, there is no trust. And the guys are amazed. I mean, I hammered this home with them. We are not going to call a customer back 3 and 4 times. Oh, you need this. Oh, you need this.
Right.
If we don't catch it the first time, we're going to eat it, but we're going to give that customer what he expects. And that has built the trust. There's, at this point, whatever we say, it's a done deal. They just say, do it. And that's a great, great feeling. But it's also a catch-22. It's easy to get lazy and take advantage of that. But we practice it, and we just hold to our ethical standards, and we will not sell anybody anything that's not required.
And again, I think that's good on several levels. It's good. I like to go home at night and sleep well, knowing that our business is, we're not a bunch of crooks. We're not taking advantage of people. And it doesn't mean that we never make a mistake. It just means that we're not purposely cheating anybody. And we're going to take care, if we do make a mistake, we're going to own up to it, as you said, and take care of it. As we both know, and I do think that it's a very small minority of businesses. I'm not one of these guys that thinks business people by and large are corrupt. That's not been my experience. My experience has been the average business person is an honest person to deal with. But in your business, and quite honestly, again, I'll admit it, in the business I'm in, there have been some unscrupulous characters in there that have taken advantage of people. And I think companies like us sometimes have to go overboard to prove we're not part of that crowd.
Well, that's true, and that's what you do, because you are who you are, I'm who I am, and you do what you have to do.
By the way, before we get any further, what's your website? How do people get a hold of you?
They can go to the website at nobodysautorepair.com.
Right.
Give us a call on the phone, 770-277-6320.
And you're on Scenic Highway there in Lawrenceville,
I believe,
is that right?
Scenic Highway, yes.
Yeah, good deal. You know, Art, something else you and I talked about very briefly, and we probably can't discuss this completely before the break, but both of us depend on employing people that are skilled tradesmen in our business. In my business, it's skilled electronic techs. In your business, it would be skilled automotive technicians. That's beginning to be harder, in my experience, to do here in this country. Is that your experience as well?
Yes.
You know, I have the experience of a lot of folks in our church and community, their kids, we have ingrained in American kids somehow, I don't know why we've done this, but we've ingrained in them the idea that everyone should go to a four-year liberal arts college. And I try to tell them sometimes that really, strictly speaking from a financial standpoint, you can make as much, if not more, money. And if you're a person enjoys working with your hands, you will actually enjoy your life a lot more. If you learn a skill and a trade and go out there and learn how to either be a first-rate automotive mechanic or a first-rate electronic tech or electrician or things of those sorts, which are becoming very in-demand jobs in this country and top dollar being paid for the right guys. Has that been your experience as well?
It has. I've been fortunate that I haven't had to go out and run ads. I don't know if I can say this or not, but I pray God provides what we need.
Yes, you can say that.
I have a young man. He's been with me. It's going to be 5 years in November.
Wow.
And he's got a great attitude. He wants to learn. He has the ability to learn. He knows where to go get the information. And the only reason I hired him is because he would call me 3 times a day. Are you hiring yet? Are you hiring yet? And I just hired him just to get him off my back. And what a blessing that has been.
You know, that's another thing that I try to tell young people that are looking for jobs. They all go and they go on these job boards, Monster. And I'm not knocking that. That's fine. And a lot of them have the idea they should apply for jobs at all these large multinational corporations because they have jobs. And you can get employed there. That sometimes works. But, you also go through a lot of steps to get employed somewhere like that. You're going to go through human resources because you've worked in those businesses. You're going to go through human resources, and even if you get in there, and a bunch of stuff you're going to go through. Whereas with a small business like us, all you've got to do is convince usually one guy that you're the guy to be hired. They'll have you there. Back more with Art Cleave in a minute. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Stick around. He was a hard-headed man. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Art Cleave with Nobody's Auto Repair. Art, that's a great name. Was that name already there when you bought the business, I think?
It was. It was. It came from the Midas commercial. Nobody beats Midas, and the guy I bought the place from used to work for Midas.
You know, you could play off the Snellville. You know, everybody's somebody in Snellville. You could say, you know, everybody's nobody here at Nobody's. Art, we're both of us again in the at Electronic Maintenance Associates, EMAInc.net, by the way, our company. We're in the repair business as well. Our repair business is electronic motor drives. And I see so many similarities between what I do really and what you do. It's just different equipment, but it's just the same principles and the same type business, really running the same type business. One of the things that you and I were talking about briefly before the program, my dad, I grew up in a home where my dad's a mechanic. He's a Baptist preacher, but he worked his way through college and through graduate school as a mechanic. And still all my life, it wasn't uncommon for dad to have an engine torn apart or something and be fully gone. So I was around a lot of that growing up. But, you know, nowadays, the old shade tree mechanic that we used to talk about, that's getting harder and harder to do with modern cars, isn't it?
It certainly is with all the electronics. It's more than just buying a scanner and reading a couple codes. That doesn't cut it.
You know, the shade tree mechanics I was talking about would have had no idea what a mechanic or an electronic code was. I'm talking about. All right, I'm old enough to go back to the days when we were changing points and and adjusting them and adjust. It had a timing light to it. Now, I thought of an electronic device was a timing light to adjust the timing by moving the distributor cap. You know, back in those days. You know, equipment is so much more reliable today. That is people complain about cars, but we would both have to admit that automotive equipment, as is electronic equipment or anything else, is a lot more reliable these days. It's the same thing in our business. It used to be that when people bought an electronic motor drive, you could almost bet on it failing a few times in the first year. Now, those things run like sewing machines for 10 years and never burp. And in cars, I think I told you, I drive a Lexus with 240,000 miles on it. It runs fine. You know, that would have been unheard of back, a few years ago. That would have been pretty much impossible. You'd have been driving a piece of junk.
Oh, yeah. I can remember growing up, my dad, if it hit 60,000 miles, he had to get rid of that thing, or it was going to leave him on the side of the road.
Yeah. A car with 100,000 miles on it was a shot car.
Yeah.
But as far as the business goes, since you're in the repair business, and by that definition, there would be less repairs. How do you adapt to the business, to that business? Is it because there's more cars?
Well, that's part of it. But you still have parts that wear. You have belts that wear. You have brakes that wear. And then electronic, with all the electronic sensors and stuff, like computers, your computer acts up. Well, the sensors act up. And because they're electronic, they're a little more higher dollar, but you don't do the tune-ups like you used to.
You don't do tune-ups, but you know I do know, at least in my automobile. I don't know enough about automobiles across the board, but you know in my particular vehicle, it has a timing belt in there, and I'm always warned by my friends in mechanical repair that every so many miles you had best replace that timing belt, which is not a minor replacement. That's a big job.
It is.
But I'm told that to fail to do it is risking destroying your engine if you're not careful.
If it's an interference engine, that is correct.
So I would. How hard is it to convince people that they have to do that when they don't want to put out that kind of money on their car?
Majority of them are aware that that has to be done. I don't know if it's the first 3 years that they go to the dealership,
right,
and you know they're kind of reminding them this is coming up in the future. But we don't have too many problems telling somebody if they need a timing belt or it's time for a timing belt. It's in the handbook for one thing,
right?
And we do have several of them that try to push the limits, and they break, and they end up putting an engine in.
Yep. You know, in our business, we have, and this is a little bit nerdy probably for those that don't know anything about electronics, but in our business, in the large, large horsepower drives that we deal with, which are very large, several thousand horsepower type drives that we deal with, the older ones that use electrolytic bus capacitors, which is a type of capacitor in there, those have about a 10-year life, and if you don't do something about them pretty shortly around that time, it can last less than that, you're going to have catastrophic failures in there and really be down a while. And so that's the same thing I have to do, is to talk to them about, you really should think about changing this on a planned method, because otherwise you're going to be changing them in an unplanned fashion. And it may be other things damaged in the process of doing this, and you'll be much better off if we can plan this and do it in the right way. One of the things I thought about was, I don't know who your competition primarily is, if it's other small business people like you or if it's dealers, but just in general, why would, I already know this answer for myself, so it's a bit rhetorical, but I'll just get your opinion on it. Why would someone like me, a customer like me, come to you instead of going to the dealer for service on my vehicle?
Well, for one, cost. Our overhead is certainly less than a dealership's overhead. They have much larger buildings and stuff. The other thing is they're focused on one thing, one vehicle. They may not be into tires or pay too much attention to tires. They're focused on what they were trained to look at on that vehicle.
I think that's part of it. I'll just tell you from my standpoint, I just like dealing. Again, and maybe it's me because it's a small business guy, I like walking into places where the guy knows my name, and if he doesn't know my name, he will know my name. You know, he's going to meet me, and I'm going to, and see the owner. It doesn't have to be the owner; it could be the technician. Anybody, somebody is going that's going that I'm going to feel like I can talk to is there, and if and I can get to explain to me what's wrong with the car, and then I have some trust in. And not that I don't trust the dealers; I don't mean that, but it's like you sort of you get. They'll have a service writer out front that really hasn't, my experience is, won't necessarily know what's going on back in the shop at all. And you feel like there's a disconnect. Do you get that from customers?
The other thing, Eddie, is you may have a different service writer the next time you go in there.
Exactly, yes.
You come into our place, you're going to know the faces and the names of the people that are working on your cars because we don't have turnover.
I think that's also, Art, the marketing advantage of a small business. I always tell guys in small business, you should never back down from a big business because, honestly, you have some – big businesses definitely have advantages over smaller guys. There's no doubt about it. They've got more resources. They can spend more money on advertising. They can do a lot of things a small business guy can't do. They rarely can treat a customer as well as a small guy will treat a customer in a relationship sense because a small guy will get to know you.
Yes.
And your business is very important to them, and they will deal with that. You know, one thing I was going to ask you about was the repeat business. We have about a minute, but I know that in your business, repeat business is extremely important. It is in mine. I would imagine it is in yours.
Well, I'll tell you, Eddie. You know, you greet somebody with a smile on your face. You give them the service that they ask for. They're going to come back, and they're going to tell their friends, and their friends are going to tell their friends. Repeat business is not a problem for us.
You know, I'm blessed as well with a lot of repeat business, and it's frankly a lot of it has to do with the caliber of our employees that deal with the business, and it's a lot more than me. It's the people that we have been fortunate enough and blessed enough to have working for us over the years that do treat customers well. And that's a culture. I think again, it's a culture thing, isn't it?
Yes.
The idea that you need to be not just do the job, you need to be friendly to these people. These people are important to us. These people pay our checks. I always tell folks at our company, you know, the customers can fire all of us, including me. They can fire us all and put us all out of business. And there's not much we can do about it. More to come on Driven to Business. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. I am Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Back in just a moment.
He was a hard-headed man. He was brutally handsome. She was terminally pretty.
Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Art Cleave, the owner of Nobody's Auto Repair. Again, Art, I like that name. I don't know why. I just do. We had a lady on here recently has a company called Blue Hair Technology. I just like the name of that. I don't know why. Maybe it's my age. I don't know. I think the name of my company is kind of dull. I got to come up with a better name, I think, to get something catchy like that. Art, we talked about repeat business and how important it is. And, you know, all of us in business know that or should know that if you're solely dependent on new customers, if you lose every customer you get, you're not going to be in business very long because that's just impossible to keep throwing customers in the top of the funnel like that. It isn't going to happen if you run them all off. So you've got to get repeat business. But on top of that, there is inevitably customer attrition for all of us. I mean, your customers die, they move, they go buy a new car that's under warranty. I mean, whatever. I mean, something happens where you're going to lose that customer at some point. So all of us do have to attract in new business. We have to do it. I'm just curious, in your experience, what works best for that for you?
I don't know if I can tell you a specific answer as far as what works best. I know it's a combination of things. Part of it is giving back to the community,
right?
Being involved in service organizations like Rotary or
right.
Kiwanis, I'm a member of the Gwinnett Chamber of Commerce, ambassador and mentor. That's a huge piece of business. And then there's other networking groups, BNI, and there's several of them out there. But you've got to build relationships in these organizations, and that in turn brings you new customers on a regular basis.
What about referrals from your existing customers? I would imagine you'd get a lot of that.
That's huge. That's huge. The other thing is, you know, radio commercials.
Right.
I think this past year, and I'll just tell you, we're up. We've never had a down year in 11 years.
Right.
This year, we're up 30%. I don't understand the numbers, but we'll take them, and it's a blessing. But radio, I think, here on the Fish was a big thing.
The Fish, for those of you don't know, is part of Salem Broadcasting, which is also the owner of Biz 1190, right here. So it's in the same building here and everything. So that's so you're advertising through the Fish, which works for you.
Yes.
I think this whole I go back. We advertise as well, and we I do a lot in our business. The internet seems to work well for us. We're a national business, so it seems to work well for us in those terms. But I think still, by and large, if I had to nail down the best business we get, it is overall it's referrals. And I think that for some businesses may be an untapped resource. I don't mean the kind of referrals like where you ask a guy to please write down your five best friends' names so I can call them. I don't mean that kind of referral. I mean a referral where you do a good job for somebody, and then when they're at church or wherever they are, and their buddy says, you know, I'm having my car's just got a funny noise or something, and they say, well, hey, why don't you go see Art over at Nobody's Auto Repair? That's an invaluable recommendation because, you know, word of mouth. For all of us, you know, if we're sitting here, I've used this example on the radio before, but if we're sitting here trying to decide where to go to lunch, and then Isaac here says, well, you know, there's a place right down the street that's really good, we'll probably go there.
That's right.
Just not that we ever heard of it, but just because Isaac said it was good, we like Isaac, we believe what he says, so we go there. And I think that referral thing is something businesses need to pay close attention to, is to be sure that your customers are having a good time. The other thing, the point that I make to people in customer service, is that you cannot go by complaints, because a lot of customers don't complain. If they're not happy with you, they don't complain. Now, you may be a different person than me, Art. Maybe you can respond to this. If I'm in a restaurant and the food is not exactly the way I want it, I don't usually call the chef out or the waiter out or anybody and throw a fit about it. I usually just pay the bill and leave.
And don't come back.
Maybe you're the same kind of person. I don't know.
I am. It's not something that I want it fixed right now, and it's all about me. I will say, though, and this is something that I learned in the corporate world. If there is a problem, you can't just say, oh, we'll take care of it, it'll never happen again. That doesn't work.
Right.
You have got to fix the process or put something in place in the process so that it doesn't happen again.
Right.
When I have problems with our suppliers, I don't want to hear, oh, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. I want to know, what are they going to do to make sure that I get the part that I asked for in the time that they promised it? And what are they going to change in their process?
And you know, you're probably just like me, and your customers are just like mine. You know, when I have a part delivery problem in for repair, it doesn't do me any good to go make that excuse to the customer, say, oh, the part vendor said it would be here and it didn't come, because he doesn't care about that. I'm the one told it would be repaired today. And so I have to take the blame for it, whether it's really my fault or not. I have to take the blame. And you're in the exact same spot there.
That's right. And, you know, if you can go get the part, I mean, we go get the part.
Right.
I mean, we try very hard to make sure that the job is done when we told the customer it was going to be done.
Are your biggest competitors, are they other small shops? Is it the dealerships? Who are your biggest competitors?
I got to tell you, I don't look at the competition. There's 157 shops within a 5 mile radius of me.
Wow, really? Wow.
And if your customer service and your quality of work beats the rest of them, guess where they're going to come?
We used to have a back before we moved, we had a big sign in our offices on the wall that said, if we don't take care of our customer, our competitors will. And but that's sort of ingrained in me. It is the idea that, you know, we're not the only show in town. I think Andy Stanley, in one of his speeches one time, I heard him say, he said, if you have the only hot dog stand in town, it doesn't matter how good your hot dogs are. But very few of us have the only hot dog stand in town. And it does matter about our hot dogs.
I tell you, the other thing that is very helpful for competitors as well as ourselves is being able to work together.
Right.
If somebody has seen something that maybe we haven't seen or something, you know, we have open communication with shops around us, and it's great.
But doesn't that go back to what you talked about earlier, the idea of relationships in business with your employees, with your customers, and even with others in the business? I mean, that's a relationship. We have the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And this is an odd world now where, in some ways in business, where competitors become partners. And we see this in our business sometimes now. And I observe, even among not just what we're directly involved in, but I observe it even among where you'll see General Electric and Toshiba, who are competitors in some areas, you'll see them come together on a project to each sort of do the best part they can do in that project. And it's a strange world.
Yeah.
To be getting those kind of things going on there. Let's go back to the customer service discussion for just a minute, because I always like to stay on that. Or just hearing you talk, you're a relationship building kind of guy. You have, you're friendly with people. You're honest and all that. Do you actively, and I know you're part of a mentor program with the Chamber of Commerce, do you actively mentor that to your employees, or do they just pick that up from the way that you, or do they get it by example, watching you, do you think?
Yeah. Oh, they definitely get it by example. And they're willing to learn. I guess that's the biggest thing. It's interesting. I hammered and hammered and hammered customer service when I first started, and it was interesting to see how some of the old time technicians actually seen what customer service can do,
right,
for the business and for them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people with a technical bent, and that could be whether mechanically technical or electronically technical, whatever, they take a great deal of pride in their skill, in the fact that they can do things other people can't do them. And as a result, sometimes, and I used to be like this when I was younger, to be honest about it, that can lead to a deficiency in a couple of other areas where it's like, look, I fixed that thing. What's your complaint? I mean, why are you whining about it? Okay, I didn't call you back, but I fixed it. You know, without really looking, understanding the big picture is that phone call telling that guy that part was going to be late was every bit as important as what you did to repair it. Because in the customer's mind, they're not disconnected things. In your mind, maybe they are. In the customer's mind, they're not. And I think, again, it's a culture. You have to just sort of – it's not that people are bad. They're not trying to do bad work. But it's sort of developing a sense of that in a business.
Well, and people understand that things happen that are beyond your control.
Right.
And if you tell them about it so that they can make arrangements, if they need another ride or something, they are so thankful that you at least gave them the opportunity to take care of that.
Yeah, I always tell our folks that bad news does not improve with age. I mean, it's not like fine wine or something. I mean, bad news is just going to get worse with age, and customers can take bad news. What they can't take is no information. That's when you get the guy. You know, in your business, and it's just like in mine, I think if a guy's expecting his car at 4 o'clock and he shows up there at 4 to get it or calls, and then you tell him it's going to be tomorrow, that's when you've got a real mad customer in your hands. When had you called him at noon and said, hey, I thought that part was going to be here today. It's not. Can I keep your car overnight? Well, then he's not going to love the news, but he's not going to be mad at you about it because everybody understands things like that happen.
Right.
And when you're dealing with a customer in a good faith situation. Archer, I appreciate you hanging around. If you can hang around through one more break here, we will we'll finish this discussion. You're a great customer. I like the whole idea of I think the repair business of any sort, whether it's, and you can name any kind of repair you want to, whether it's automotive repair or what I do, electronic motor drive repair or television repair or house repair, anything you name in a repair business, there are things that are going to happen that are out of your control. They just are. I mean, something's not going to work right. You know, you thought this was the problem. It's not the problem, as we've talked about in the past, no matter how good you are. And the difference in people that do well in that business and people that don't, it comes down to how well they communicate to the customer and the relationship you built with the customer. If they trust you and you have momentum with them, well, then it'll cover up a multitude of sins. As the Bible says, love covers a multitude of sins. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. One more segment to come, so stick around. He was a hard-headed man. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Our guest today is Art Cleave with Nobody's Auto out there in Lawrenceville. By the way, I'll give Art to give his website for us again in just a moment here. You can also find links to Art on the eddiemayfield.com. Go there, go to the blog page. There'll be a little write-up on Art, and you can get all his contact information right there. And so give Art a call. By the way, as I mentioned earlier, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and there's other resources there, so go there and check us out. Art, you've had a very interesting career. You started off, I think, with Chrysler.
Yes, that's correct.
And I don't know why it caught my eye. One of the things you were the program manager for the Mustang convertible, which sounds fun to me for some reason. Tell us about that.
It was that was a great time. As program manager, you got to go through the whole research and development, the testing, the crash testings.
Wow.
Driving across the United States, evaluating competitive convertibles. It was just a great time. And you took things from the drawing board into production. From there, I went to being a plant manager for Volvo Trucks.
Where was this located?
That was in Ohio.
Ohio, okay.
And then from there, come down here to Georgia and started a quality division, a third-party quality division. And we sent out teams of quality inspectors to ensure that Ford, GM, BMW got quality parts into their plants if there was a problem.
Do you still drive convertibles? You have any?
I don't at this point, but
I've always wanted one. I've never talked my wife into one yet. I've always wanted one.
They're fantastic.
You know, back when you were working for these large corporations, Chrysler and Buick and others that you worked for, did you ever envision yourself back in those days running a small automobile repair shop? Did you ever envision that?
Well, the auto repair shop wasn't part of the vision. I always wanted my own business. I'll tell you a small story. I worked with a gentleman who had a transmission shop, and I had my eye on that. And my wife just would not budge. She just would not go along with me getting a transmission shop. So I thought I'd be smart, and I went over to the folks that own Nobody's, and I thought I'd get some pros and cons, and I'd be able to sell her on that transmission shop. So we went out to dinner, and I gave her my best sales pitch, and she just wouldn't budge. And out of desperation, I says, well, what about Nobody's? Gary asked if I was interested in Nobody's, and she said, that'd be fine.
Well, that's what we call unintentional consequences, aren't you?
And it's been a great ride.
You know, for anybody, what do you think about a young person starting off in business today, in today's business environment? You got any thoughts about that?
Well, I wish I'd have did it 20 years sooner.
Right.
I've been in the restaurant business. It was a franchise. I wouldn't recommend that.
And all the restaurateur owners just turned the radio off at us.
I would highly recommend any person wanting to get started, go ahead and start their own business.
You know, I always tell people it's a great thing to do, but you need to sit down and visualize what that looks like. I've told the story several times, but I have when my wife and I bought a little cabin up in North Georgia, and when I first started going up there, there was a lady that I met up there that had a little cafe up there in North Georgia, a little small cafe that she ran. And when I started talking to her one day, she was telling me about her and her husband had always wanted to live out in the mountains, and they always wanted to. So she started this little business, sort of a lifestyle business. She actually bought it from somebody, I think, and they were going to do that. She said, however, this has not been what I thought. She said, you know, we're here at 5 every morning till 9 at night. We can't take vacations because we can't really, this business doesn't make enough money to hire really anybody besides us running it. And she said, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I think those are the kinds of things people need to think through, because you need to visualize the act, not the pride of ownership of a business, but think through, if you're going to have employees, do you like dealing with employees? If you don't, maybe you better think about that. Or do you like dealing with sale? If you're in a lot of businesses and it's going to require selling, if you don't like selling, you better think about that, because you're going to be doing it. And a lot of the little things that perhaps you like to do, if the business doesn't make enough money for you to hire someone to do the things you don't do well, which fortunately in my case, I've been able to do that. But you know what I'm saying? People go into this with rose-colored glasses instead of reality.
Well, they've got to understand, again, you talk about the depth of a bench. You talk about processes. You talk about systems. If you're just going in there and you're going to just run the business by the seat of your pants, it's not going to work.
It's going to be very frustrating. You know, I used to, when I first started a business, and frankly, I tell people that I would be a great lesson in how to not do a lot of things. I've done about everything wrong could be done in a business, and somehow, through the grace of the Lord, got through it and learned from it. But I used to go occasionally to some of these time management seminars, and they would say, well, you got to delegate this. Well, at that time, I was like a one- or two-man business, and I said, who am I going to delegate that to? I don't have anybody to delegate that to. You know, it's just me. And, you know, I always had 30 balls in the air at once, and the guy would always say, well, you got to get rid of some of those. Well, which one? And those are all important balls. But over time, you do learn to systemize things a bit. Say, okay, this has got to be automatic. I can't do this every day. This has got to become an automatic thing here. Computers help a lot with that. You know,
yes.
You can automate some processes to help take care of those kinds of things. You know, in a brief moment we have left here, tell us about, you know, when I go into an automotive repair shop now, one of the first things they do is hook up to your car, and they're reading out on a display, this code and that code and the other code. Talk to us about the difference in that now, how that works.
Well, again, there's a big difference between reading codes and diagnosing a problem.
Right.
And even the equipment. I mean, if you're not technically educated to operate that equipment, you're not going to do a very good job in diagnosing the customer's problem. So I have people all the time, I went over here to AutoZone and this is the code they give me. Well, you want me to replace that part, or you want me to tell you what's wrong with your car?
Right.
It's not that easy.
No, I actually have written a couple of magazine articles and have given some speeches about the art of troubleshooting. And you know, there's a lot more to troubleshooting. Troubleshooting is a bit of an art.
It's
a science, but it's an art to it. And over time, you do develop some expertise in it. And it's a beautiful thing to watch when you find somebody that is really good at it. Art, in about 30 seconds, tell us what's important to you. How do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as a guy that built a business on honesty and integrity and customer service, I think any of the community organizations that I've known, even the suppliers, there's not, I don't think there's another facility in the area that they would say is better than ours when it comes to honesty and integrity.
Well, you've been a great guest. Give us your website one more time.
That's nobodysautorepair.com.
Nobodysautorepair.com. Go check Art out. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Tell your friends about us, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.